Hey everybody, Kevin Grossman, president of Talent Board. I hope you are all safe and well during these challenging times. And keeping communication open with all of your candidates, external as well as your internal employees, is probably more critical than ever before. Letting them know that even if hiring is slowing for your organization, you still want to do a better job at recruiting and hiring. This can help with your overall perceived fairness and brand perception in the near term and the long term. Plus, understanding your candidate experience strengths, weaknesses, and perception gaps will help you better understand and ultimately make improvements to your processes that will benefit you today and in the future once we're beyond this healthcare crisis. Thanks for your time, everybody, and enjoy the podcast.
Chris and I invited a whole bunch of technology folks to a conversation in which the members who are employers doing the slaying off talked about what good would look like if somebody helped them.
You're listening to the Candy Shop Talk podcast, brought to you by Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards Benchmark Research, and hosted by Kevin W. Grossman. Talent Board is the first nonprofit research organization focused on elevating and promoting a quality candidate experience. The Candy Shop Talk podcast welcomes Jerry Crispin, Talent Board co-founder and principal and co-founder of Career Crossroads. In this episode, we'll talk about the new site, Recruiters Recruiting Recruiters, its mission, the impact of coronavirus on recruiting and hiring, and the importance of benchmarking your candidate experience today. Listen in on how improving candidate experience impacts recruiting and the business bottom line. Jerry, thank you so much for joining me on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. Welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
Excellent. So Jerry, you know, I mean, this is pretty unprecedented times that we're living in. We've got a global pandemic. We've also got, unfortunately, devastated economies because of all the safety measures that we've had to adhere to mitigate the spread. Over 30 million and growing unemployed in the U.S. That includes also many HR and recruiting professionals that belong to the Candy community as well as your Career Crossroads community. Now that leads us to Recruiters Recruiting Recruiters, kind of a funny name, but a really important mission that we were very happy to be involved with. But tell us a little bit about it and how and why it came to be.
And it is Recruiters Recruiting Recruiters. Almost got it to a point where I don't mess it up too much. And the other, you know, the other part is half full glass too. It's a beautiful day for the most part. I am not sick.
Amen.
I look on the positive side and, you know, we try to do some of the things that we can do to be helpful. And I think that's one of the things that you see coming out of this throughout our space and really almost every profession. There are very few exceptions out there. People, I think, are trying to help others if they happen to be in a pretty good place. And so the backstory for this really came up because we were starting to get conversations with our members. And Career Crossroads has about 140 members, and all of them are very large. And they were starting to say, I can't confirm this publicly right now, but within the next week, we may lay off 10,000 people, 100,000 people. You know, that gets your attention when several of them are talking numbers that are unbelievable. The other thing that was mentioned was the word furlough. And obviously by now, we just hear it over and over and over again. And there isn't a common definition because obviously some companies put people out and are paying them still. Some companies can't pay them, but are handling their benefits.
Right.
In almost every instance, at least with my members, the intention for furlough that was common was I want them back. And if I want them back, that means I'm going to have to think about how do I engage them during the time that they're no longer working in the company. And, you know, if I don't help them or try to, you know, do something worthwhile for them, they're going to be less likely to want to come back depending upon where they go and what they do. So it was out of that that Chris and I invited a whole bunch of technology folks to a conversation in which the members who are employers doing the slaying off talked about what good would look like if somebody helped them do the right thing with their furloughed employees, and if their surge hiring, you know, made that easier. And meanwhile, many of these same folks were directly connecting each other, like a CVS was connecting to a Hilton or a Marriott. And they were building tools just amongst themselves, bypassing everything, that allowed for workers to see an opportunity at Hilton to go to CVS, for example, for a time being, and bypassing some of the onerous things around background checks and a few other things to make this a lot faster.
Which they had to.
Well, they had to, but not everybody's got the resources to be able to accomplish all of that.
Sure, sure.
So we were hoping that the technology companies would agree to a single solution for all kinds of furloughed workers. But most of them were already trying to step up something themselves. And we realized that it probably was more than we could request that they all work together on a single platform. It's just not in the cards. And yet they got it. And they were going to be doing something for their clients and very often beyond their clients to try and help furloughed workers and people who are laid off. We did come to an agreement that we would do it for recruiters. So more narrowly focusing to the recruiting operations within many companies, because some of them were going to be furloughed as well. Other companies were going to continue hiring and probably were going to need tougher recruiters. So we said, okay, well, what would that look like? And it was the employers that said, I'm not sending my recruiters or anyone else to a platform that I don't know is going to treat them, whether they will treat them well, because it'll reflect on me if I'm encouraging them to use that platform. That started us talking about, well, what would that look like? And obviously, as you know, candidate experience and the treatment of folks can involve a lot of things. So we had to get down to something simple, and we got down to three things. One was setting expectations. Secondly was delivering on the expectations that were set. And the third was no black hole. That's pretty simple. And now the point is, okay, if we're going to agree that that is the kind of code of conduct that an employer needs to agree to going in, then how do we know that it was handled that way?
That's like minimum bar, right, Jerry? That's minimum bar.
Yeah, minimum bar. It's like below that line, your treatment of the candidate is unacceptable.
Yep.
Above that bar, you could certainly do a lot more. But the fact of the matter is, at least you're above that bar. And everyone agreed that we would measure that by asking the candidates at appropriate times whether or not those three things happen. And a method for putting that together for each company and on a dashboard that we could easily scan. And so if people were below the bar, if you will, I would, hopefully very few of them, I would personally call them and encourage them to do better or eliminate them from the platform. And so that's essentially what's taken place. It took another 4 weeks to actually make that kind of happen with about 250 employers who are pre-approved. But in the last, actually the first few days, we had another 50 companies basically say, I want in on this. And we realized that we want to focus in on doing this for employers who are trying to hire recruiters for themselves, as opposed to lots of good staffing organizations and RPOs that are doing good work, do hire recruiters, but not for themselves, typically for others. And so we're basically not in a position to really audit that well. So we're going to stick with the employers hiring for themselves, but we want to make sure that all recruiters who participate in recruiters recruiting recruiters have the opportunity to see other resources that are out there. So there's some great resources that have been stood up by Phenom, by iSIMS, by Accenture, by Candidate ID, by Intello, goes on and on. And so about 20 to 30 of those, we have a resource directory so that we can advise recruiters that we're not the only thing. In fact, we know we won't be the biggest thing. We did scrape, and we are scraping twice a day, every one of the now 300 employers that are participating. And we've got about 300 jobs, something like that, that these companies are hiring. And obviously, many of them aren't hiring recruiters. They're furloughing recruiters. Right. So we also have a couple hundred several hundred recruiters who have joined to participate, and that will continue to grow. I'd like to see several thousand recruiters engaged. I'd like to see several thousand jobs available where people agree to the code of conduct and lots of information about other things that recruiters could do to satisfy their needs. So that's essentially it.
Then it's pretty easy for both employers and candidates to sign up, get vetted, and participate in this. I know that there's been a lot more interest from the broader Candy community, much of which crosses over with the Career Crossroads organizations as well.
All employers really, as soon as they're approved, are part of the consortium. And then anybody who's willing, so if an RPO or a consultant that has a lot of clients wants to participate in the consortium, all they have to do is be willing to tell their clients, employers, about recruiting recruiters. If they do that, then we'll add them to the list of supporters for the consortium of recruiters recruiting recruiters. In fact, I'm going to have a conversation with a number of people in Europe who are trying to do something similar and realize that it would be a little bit of work and thought that they would try and help expand recruiters recruiting recruiters to be more global. And I think that will be cool.
And that's great. And you've said it flawlessly multiple times. So that's good. I know there was a funny blooper reel that was put together based on many of us. I did not actually bloop that. Maybe I'll do it today on this, but recruitersrecruitingrecruiters.com is where you want to go for those who are interested as employers to participate as well as recruiters looking for jobs right now, right?
Yep.
Another thing I wanted to talk about in this podcast, so thanks for sharing that, Jerry, is the fact that you and your partner, Chris Hoyt, you've also been holding regular public meetings with TA leaders talking about the impact of coronavirus on their businesses and recruiting and hiring as well. So just kind of high level, but what have been some of the key takeaways and shares that you're willing to share here that you've heard over the past few weeks? If not months, actually, now.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, a lot of it is extremely positive.
Oh, good.
It's excellent. Positive in the sense that large companies, I think unlike other recessions, really expect some level of return in a reasonable period of time. Given that they will come out of it, they want to keep their employees who continue to work for them engaged. And those that they need to furlough, again, they want to keep in contact with. And obviously that takes many different approaches, but I'm absolutely convinced that there's a lot of effort, time, energy, and money being spent by corporations in terms of doing that. I think many more corporations, especially large corporations, are continuing the benefits of recruiters. Not just recruiters, but all of the furloughed folks for a lot longer than most people expect. And I do know that the government, obviously, part of the $1 trillion that we spent and many of the other governments in Europe and Asia have also figured out various ways to keep some of the folks whole. But It's still a struggle. There's no question about it. What I think we're seeing, though, is a very significant shift in attitudes about jobs in the context of their career and careers in the context of their life. And that hasn't happened really for 100 years. That was the shift that took place, you know, with the Depression.
Right.
And I'm convinced that coming out of this, how candidates weight the decision that they make about the kind of company that they want to work for is going to change significantly. And it's going to require almost every employer to rethink or reset their employer brand, the values that they have, and the way in which they communicate those values to employees. And companies that pretty much wholesale let their employees go and stayed not in contact with them and are not known to be treating them particularly well may have more difficulty coming out of practice than we might think today. And I think that some companies are going to gain an awful lot from how they treat the folks that they had to furlough.
Yeah, I think this was so much so fast. I know I've had many conversations with yourself and others in our space too about the fact that one of the worst things that organizations could do was to just not only fully put on their brakes, but just to stop communicating anything publicly to their own their candidates, to their employees, and that will come back to haunt them at some point, because it's not going to be one light switch that goes on. It's going to be a series of staged light switches, then two steps back and one step forward. And as we get through this pandemic, and it's going to be those that are communicating regularly with their, again, even if they're not hiring, hey, candidates, thanks for your interest. This is what we're doing. And also talking about what they're doing as an organization to help too right now.
You see a lot of these companies going out of their way to help well beyond their own employees.
Right.
And that kind of paying it forward is not lost on the kinds of values that people have who do work, you know. So there's a couple of interesting things that give me a lot of hope around that. So we were talking to a number of team leaders, and every one of them that had totally gone from, some work at home now and again, and then some Zoom effort, but very often they would not show themselves and that sort of thing, to 100%, you know, work at home and 100% engaging people, you know, through video, if you will, and video becoming an important factor. Think about how many meetings were, quote, video meetings, but you never saw anyone because they wouldn't show their face. Was, well, I'm in my pajamas, I'm working from home, whatever. Sure. Now, I will tell you, 90% or more are showing their face. There's a need to kind of engage around this. Anyhow, we were talking to folks who have and all of them had a Zoom call every morning with their team. And the first half hour of that meeting was never about work. It was about how are you? How is your family? What's going on? It was so common, and it reminded me of so many other cultures like Brazil and a few others where that is built into the culture. In order to do work well, we have to demonstrate that the people we work with, we actually care about them. You know, the U.S. is not really good at that. It might be maybe in the deep South where people, you know, are a little bit more open about spending a little time doing that. But, you know, in the past, you call somebody from New York and say, let's take a couple minutes and talk about whatever. They're going to tell you, no, what is it that you're calling me about? Get to the point. Let's move on. That's not happening now. So I think we're shifting from a network-valued society to one that's much more community-valued. And so it's not just who you know, but whether you care about each other.
Yeah, right.
The big question is, how long will that last? Will that be a permanent shift? And so, you know, what does that mean in relation to how work is going to be organized, how it's going to be led, productivity issues, et cetera?
Yeah, if we thought, Jerry, that in the past, in the old world, as I'll call it, that we could somehow read the tea leaves, we sure as hell can't read them now. And meaning that there's ideas around, there's scenarios around what may happen in the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, you know, 10 years and beyond for that matter. But I do agree with you. I think there's the potential of this kind of collaborative, caring, community-centric work, I think is very exciting to me, and I think many of us in the space. So that said, one of the last things in this podcast I wanted to ask you today is, out of all the things that we've been talking about, especially this last thing about keeping the channels of communication open with candidates and employees, even with companies who aren't necessarily hiring right now that still have pools of candidates, why is it important that they still measure and ask for feedback and about their any experience that they've had? Why is that important?
And the answer is going to be, we don't know the answer to that. We will find it out. And I think it could go one of two ways. And you know the way I want it to go, but
right.
But I'm smart enough to know that sometimes we don't get what we ask for. Right. And so we could be going back to the way it was. And if we do, then the majority of companies will probably not care about candidate experience unless we're talking about the person I actually want to hire. And we'll just have an awful lot of other individuals who aren't treated well, impacting those companies, but the company's not measuring the fact that they're impacting them. You know, you still get ticked off if those things aren't happening. There's still going to be a consequence. It's just companies won't care. They won't be measuring it. The other scenario is one in which this community continues to grow and community activity continues to grow. And I will tell you that in the Depression 100 years ago, that's when unions started because of the abuse of workers. And as things started to get better and people did get jobs, they were abused by employers because employers saw that there was a lot of talent out there and they could have their pick. And even if they were abusing them, they still had to, you know, make a living. But employees realized that this compromised safety and health and everything. And so unions formed. Now, we know that obviously over time, unions became corrupted because of who was running them and how that money went out. But the intention was a collective of people who belong together, are willing to support one another in order to get a fair pay, in order to have health benefits, in order to make sure that the environment was safe for everyone. And I got to tell you, we may not call it unions, we might call it a guild, or we might call it whatever, but I think one of the possibilities of this shift and how people see one another and want to be part of companies that do support community, they'll demand it. They'll be not only asking for it, they will be making choices about whether or not they'll go to work for a company that might treat them poorly the next time there's a pandemic, the second wave of this one. If in fact that happens, I don't think that we can come out of it the same, but it is possible. I certainly don't think that when we come out of it, we will rapidly get to the levels of hiring that we did in the past. I just don't think enough companies will, you know, suddenly get their hiring and number of employees all the way back to what it was just a pre-pandemic. They just can't build it that fast. When you think about restaurants and airlines and all of the others that have lost so many folks. So it's going to be a while comes back. I think employees who are, or not employees, but professionals who really want work are going to be a little bit more choosy about where they're going to go.
I agreed with you. I think the one final comment on that, I think we've seen this, what I like your name of guild, if for just lack of another name, we're not calling it unions, but community guilds, whatever the case is with essential workers, we've already seen those movements kind of re-energized, whether it be not just healthcare. And even in my area, we've had, there've been nurses who have been, you know, saying we want more safety precautions, in our workplace, but also essential workers like that have been fighting to become essential workers, like grocery people who work in the grocery and clerks.
So here's the thing: I'm a nurse, and I complained about the fact that I don't have enough safety issues here, and no one talks to me. In fact, I get fired. Do you think I'm going back to that hospital?
No.
Do you think how hard would it be to steal a nurse from that hospital to a hospital that actually listens to you?
Right. I know.
And demonstrate that they're working their ass off to get those things done. So fundamentally, I'm convinced that that will have a lasting effect.
Yes.
And how we look at employers.
Agreed. Well, listen, Jerry, this has been a great conversation. Always enjoy talking with you, talking shop with you. So thanks so much again for being on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. And I look forward to, at some point, sharing a glass of not just virtual wine with you, but clinking glasses in real life at some point. So
I would really, really like that. And it's going to be a while, I'm afraid.
It is.
But hopefully it will happen sooner than later.
Yeah, we'll see. Thank you again, Jerry.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Candy Shop Talk podcast. For more information about Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards and benchmark research, visit www.thetalentboard.org.